Welcome to Make Your Shit, a podcast about empowering creatives like yourself to overcome obstacles, the real ones and the ones you imagined, to push through moments of doubt and indecision, to find the joy in the work that you want to do, and ultimately, to give yourself permission to make the shit that you want to make. I'm your host, Kyle S. Andrews. I'm a screenwriter, actor, producer, and creative advocate. I've spent the better part of the last decade helping artists, industry pros, and people who didn't necessarily see themselves as creatives take strides to break into the business, hone their skills, and most importantly, find their voice in an industry that just doesn't want to listen. On today's show, I talk with writer-director Jennifer Cooney, whose independently produced film Wildfire recently made its world premiere at the Red Dirt Film Festival, and whose next feature, Woman of God, is currently in development. We'll discuss her rather poetic approach to the industry, what working with legendary actor Ed Asner taught her about making your limitations work for you, where community fits into an artist's vision, and how clipping the mother leaf can help you get where you're going. You are gonna want to stick around for that analogy. If you'd like to support the show, click that follow button, share us with your friends, and give us a shout out on Instagram and Twitter at MYS Podcast. If you'd like to follow me, I'm on Instagram at Kyle F. Andrews. My guest today is Jennifer Cooney. Jennifer is an East Coast writer, director, and producer, and the CEO of her production company, Halfjack Generation. As a creative, Jen is deeply passionate about her character-driven stories of inner demons and the courage it takes to transcend them. Her fascination and inspiration are driven by divinity and sexuality, love and truth, freedom and humanity, and how all those worlds intertwine. Her directorial debut, Wildfire, in which seven acquaintances get radically honest about their lives, premiered this year at the Red Dirt Film Festival, where it claimed 9 jury award nominations, including Best Director and Best Feature Film, and it won 2 of them. She lives between the countryside of Pennsylvania and the shoreline of Florida with her artist wife and 2 furry sons. She is currently in development on her next feature, Woman of God. I had a great conversation with Jen. I always have great conversations with Jen. I've known Jen for about 6 years since I actually met her. I was her contest reader at a contest. I thought her script that she had sent in was just an absolutely magical script. It was one of my favorites, probably one of the top 10 favorite scripts I've ever read. And I have read a lot of scripts. Jen's is so good, and everything that Jen makes is just a wonderful read, and also when they're made into films are perfect cinematic experiences filled with drama and thrills. And if she's writing comedy, it's very funny. If she's writing something a little bit more mysterious, you're really wondering what's going on. And it's always very interconnected worlds where the characters are much more than meets the eye. Here it is, my conversation with Jennifer Cooney. Jen, I am so happy to have you on the show today.
Yeah, so excited to chat. Happy to be here.
I know. You're one of my favorite people to talk to. I feel like every time I talk to you, I feel like I've learned a little bit more about filmmaking, indie filmmaking especially. You live not in Los Angeles, not in New York City. You live in beautiful Pennsylvania. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to filmmaking and how you got there in such an idyllic part of the country?
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely not the beaten path, but I think that's kind of a theme in my life, is getting there by my own methods. I was working very financially secured at a family business for 12 years and just slowly dying inside behind a desk in a cubicle without any natural light or creative outlets whatsoever. And one night my wife said, "What do you think about?" And I said, "I guess nothing." Because she's a painter and she thinks about her paintings all the time. And my answer was dismaying, to say the least.
Wow.
And she said, "So what do you want to do? What do you want to think about?" And I said, "Well, I've always wanted to write a movie." And she said, "You've literally never said that to me." I said, "I've literally never said it to myself." And she said, "Well, you got to do it." I said, "I totally agree." And that was probably 8 years ago, maybe 9 at this point. But I started going part-time with the business until I finally left and started doing filmmaking full-time. But I just did everything I could to get myself out there, you know, enter screenwriting contests, which is how you and I met those many moons ago.
It feels like just yesterday, but that was at least 5 or 6 scripts ago.
Five at least.
Well, that's so interesting to me because you are such a, you know, I think in that context of meeting you as a screenwriter in need of notes, there was just something so natural about your approach to writing a movie. And, you know, doing the math of how many years ago you started and how many years we've known each other, it does not seem like there was a long time going between I want to make movies and here's a really good screenplay. What was it like diving headfirst into learning the screenwriting process?
Magical, because I love learning. I love when I don't know how to do something and surrounding myself with people that know how to do it. And so I went to every seminar that I could. Didn't matter which coast it was on. I was there. I read every screenwriting book I could get my hands onto, took classes online. I just immersed myself in 6 months after my first online course ended. I had a guy that I was working with in France email me a job posting about a lesbian family drama, which was what I was kind of working on in our class. And he said, hey, I saw this posting and I thought of you. So I hit the little apply button and it gives you this whole big block for putting in your resume and your work experience and your awards, none of which I had. I just put my phone number in and I said, I think I'm the writer for you. Here's my phone number. And I hit apply, never thinking about it again until that night. My wife, I tell her, hey, I applied for a screenwriting job today. She said, oh, good. It's good to get your first no out of the way, blah, blah, blah. As she's saying that, my phone rings, Chicago number. I'm like, holy God, this is the guy. And we talked for 45 minutes. And he's like, I just love that you sent me your phone number. He's like, there was just such confidence in that. And I was like, well, good. I'm happy you took it that way. But I literally had nothing else to say about my experience other than the fact I knew I could write the story that you wanted to tell.
And I mean, that right there is a huge barrier. Just getting in touch with someone.
Exactly.
Opens you up to a world of possibilities. I'm afraid of the phone. I hate the phone. But like, sometimes you need to have the phone to be able to, you know, it's a method of communication to get your word out there.
It has its place in the world.
So of course it happens that way. Of course, somebody from the middle of France gets in touch with you and says, hey, I think you're the right person for this. I feel like there's a certain poetry to the way you write, which you don't often find in a screenplay. Let me phrase it this way. You could write anything you wanted to. Is there something about the cinematic version of the written word that draws you in more than maybe a full chapter of a narrative expression of a journey, you know, that's going to take you 10,000 pages? Is there something that specifically draws you in about writing visuals and cinematic
Absolutely.
Art?
Definitely. There's something about the visual manifestation, the visual bringing to life of my characters and their interactions with each other that would feel incomplete to me on a page. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why directing lent itself to me so naturally, because being on the set of my first film, which was the result of that phone call, that 45-minute phone call, being on the set of that film and not directing it, it was like I was chewing my fingers off of my hands, letting someone else take the reins on my characters and their expression and how they relate to each other and how they feel around each other. And I knew from that moment forward that I had to direct.
So you're a writer and you're a director. Within that context, clearly the directing of a project gives you a little more control over the outcome to it. When it comes to what you've learned through it, has the writing process of writing several movies adjusted how you look at directing?
That's a great question. I 100% thought I wanted to do nothing more than write screenplays. I even took a course in New York about writing, directing, producing, and didn't even take notes on the producing or directing part of it. I just sat there and listened because I was so convinced that all I wanted to do was write. I thought I just wanted to be in a room by myself, churning out scripts for the rest of my life. But being on set and watching how quickly the script can change, even working with a director before getting onto set, you see how quickly a script can change. Then sitting with the editor in post-production and watching how quickly a story can change, it just became so abundantly clear to me that there are many writers involved in the final manifestation of a film. And it was like, if I'm going to truly bring forth these stories in the way that my heart is telling me to, I need to garner as much creative control over the final outcome as I possibly can.
Well, you recently did that on your debut feature film, Wildfire, which is currently making the rounds on the festival circuit. It made its world premiere at the Red Dirt Film Festival in Oklahoma. It was nominated for a whole bunch of awards. It won two. Can you just tell us what that experience was like, knowing that you needed to get in the director's seat, and now that you have done it, seeing where the film is going?
Yeah, I think the most important factor in getting from point A to point B is knowing that you're meant to do something and never second guessing it for a second. Because especially in this business, you're going to have 1,000 people tell you that you can't do it. I mean, every step of the way, you're going to have somebody say, you can't. And you need to be able to say and know and feel, yes, I can. Because if you can't get to that point on your own, you're going to be swallowed up by this business. So I love this part of the story, Kyle, because you are such an integral part of this. You had optioned one of my scripts. That's really what brought us closer. And, you know, you were thinking about who's going to direct this thing, and you're throwing all these names at me. And the whole time, all I could think of was, well, what about me? I want to direct it. And when I finally said that to you, you said, well, we can't get $6 million for an untested director. And I said, so...
And I hated saying every single word of those things.
No, but I mean, it was true. That was a true statement, though. And that's the hard part of being a producer, is there are a lot of true statements. But in my world, you can't doesn't equate to you won't. In my world, you can't means, well, where's the part of that formula that turns it into yes, you can? So my response to you was, well, sure, I can. Are you telling me to direct something? And you said, yes, I'm telling you to make a short. So that's immediately what I set out to do. I actually hired a local film crew before I even finished the script. And 20 pages into the script, I realized that I was not writing a short script. I was writing a feature script.
I would say at 20 pages, that's a good place to realize that this
good
is
indicator.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, absolutely. So it all just fell into place after that. And I mean, getting to Red Dirt, even getting accepted to a film festival with a feature film, you know, it carries more weight to have a feature film in a festival, but it also takes up much more of their time, which means it's much harder to get into a festival with a feature film. So it's really a give and take that I wasn't aware of. But getting in was a huge feat. And then going there and getting nominated for nine jury awards, two of which were Best Feature Film and Best Director, that was one of the most incredible validations and moments of my life. It was incredible. So I really just couldn't be prouder of the film at this point.
I mean, I couldn't be prouder of you having done that and brushing off my shoulder. You're welcome.
Thanks for the shove.
But again, that's kind of what our artists need in this town. You know, artists, especially if you aren't coming from the internal mechanisms of churning out artists that I think LA and New York sometimes do, you are an outsider trying to break into an industry that already has a lot of artists in it. There are a ton of artists trying to make it who have lived it their whole lives. For you, how do you stay positive in getting your work out there, especially when you're confronted by so much rejection?
One of the biggest nuggets I ever realized in my whole life was challenge means opportunity. No doesn't mean no. No means not this way. And, you know, it's funny. My dog has a cone on its head right now. And all he wants to do is lick the wound on his arm, right? But us, the owner, the moms, we put the cone on and we say, you can't. I know you really want to, but this is what's best for you. And in 3 weeks, you'll understand why and it'll be fine. And I think that the universe does that to us, but we don't get it. So my wife and I like to say, the universe has a cone on our heads right now. And it's like, you know, sometimes all you want is to get representation or get into another festival or just get this actor to read your friggin' script, right? That's all you want. You think if I just get these things, it's all going to fall into place. But there's just this bigger picture at work and you have a cone on your head and you can't get to that actor or you can't get to that festival or you can't get to this thing that you think if you just get there, all your problems will be solved. But what's really going on is there's something bigger. And when the cone comes off, you'll get why you couldn't get to those things.
It's such a beautiful analogy. And just the idea of that I'm walking around with a cone on my head that I don't even realize is there is sort of, it's a way to release into that you have control over what you have control over. And then one of the things you have control over is how you respond to things. You can't control to things happening to you, but you can control how you respond to them.
100%.
In that sense, you know, I've worked with you so long. You are a wonderful screenwriter, but none of us get to be Mozart for the most part. It doesn't just fall out. It's work. We have to work. We have to do the work. What is your relationship with the rewrite process? How do you deal with those moments where you know something is right on the cusp, but you can't quite get it to where it needs to? How do you break through those walls?
I love rewriting. It's probably my favorite part of the writing process. You know, I read a quote from Jordan Peele. I'm going to paraphrase. It's something to the effect of, when I'm writing a first draft, I keep reminding myself that all I'm doing is shoveling sand into the sandbox so later I can build castles.
I love that.
And I think writing a first draft can be so daunting because we think it needs to be anything. It doesn't need to be anything. It can just be a big pile of words on pages. Because once you've done that, once you've typed fade in, fade out, and everything in between, now you can start tinkering. Now you can read it and say, this page is garbage, and put a big X through it. Or this page is brilliant, but it makes no sense. Do I want to keep it and make it make sense? Or do I want to cut it out of here and save it for later? Mm-hmm. That to me is the most exciting part, the refining process, deepening a character's relationship to something symbolic in the film, or taking the thread of theme and weaving it more delicately throughout so it's less sight seen and more felt. It's like, how do we take all of these elements and create the sculpture that we're wanting to create? And to me, I like looking at a script as its own piece of art, because I think it can be. The hard truth is that not all scripts will get made. Mm-hmm. So if you're constantly focused on the outcome, you might end up just disappointed. But if you treat it like its own piece of art, you can be satisfied at the end of it. And then if it gets picked up, great, make a shooting script out of it. And then you can turn it into a blueprint. But like, until that moment, give it the respect it deserves.
I really appreciate that approach to it. You know, it does. Sometimes I think as screenwriters, we want the screen and the writing can be a difficult marriage at times. And especially since, you know, the only people who are ever going to read the scripts tend to be people who are looking at it in a dollars and cents point of view, as opposed to the artistic frame in which you wrote it. So finding your own ability to be satisfied in your work is probably the most, boy, letters to a young artist. I wish that we were all told how we can not make the initial work so precious that we hold on to it over finding something better. In that sense, how do you, you know, this is a tough industry. And as a writer, director, producer, you are doing everything and there are only so many hours in the day. How do you maintain your mental health when there is so much pressure, real or imagined, to deliver on, you know, putting your team together, the story that you've made? How do you maintain focus?
Loving what I do. And really believing in what I'm putting out there. I've been hired by lovely human beings to write projects for them. And it didn't really work out because while I was hired, while I was being paid well, while I was being respected and given autonomy within the creation, it wasn't coming from my heart and soul. It was coming from someone else's. And that works for many, many people. And many people can make someone else's passion their passion. And that's beautiful and wonderful. And your life is probably much better because of that. I don't have that chip. My destiny is not to create other people's work. It's to put my own heart and soul into what I create and see it to fruition, not letting it be passed on or compromised in any way or sold out in any way, shape, or form. So to me, it's believing in everything I do and every step I take and knowing why I'm taking those steps. And then maintaining focus and energy is effortless. And to me, effortless work is how you know you're on the right path.
Effortless work. I think when you click into that zone, it can be so freeing in the creative process. Of course, there are distinct parts of the process. And I do feel like, you know, the writing is very insular, as you've spoken to. However, the production part, where you have to have collaborators involved in your grand vision, and you have to work with a team to make sure you get where you intended to go. Specifically in the context of actors, as a director who is still learning as she goes along and still like growing as a director, what have you learned about working with actors, in particular, ensuring that you get the performance you need out of them while also giving them space to be the creatives that they need to be?
To me, everything after typing fade out is a collaboration in the film industry. And you need to find where your line is and balance it very, very well. The line being, this is my vision versus this is your vision. And finding why your vision is your vision and respecting why their vision is their vision. And then understanding where those two worlds meet. I think we can get really lost in how it started to the point where it's going becomes muddied because now it's becoming its own thing and we want it to go here. But because we're holding on to this old idea of how it started, we can't get to where we're going. It makes me think of something I learned in a poetry workshop in college. I think about this all the time. Do you ever hear the concept of a mother leaf?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So when you're good with plants, as I try my hardest to be, but I'm usually not, the idea is what first springs up from a plant is a mother leaf. And it's a very large leaf. And what it does is it gathers the sun and it gets all of, you know, gathers the water and it does everything it needs to feed this plant to become what it wants to be. So then all the smaller little things come up underneath it. And that starts growing and pushing the mother leaf up. But what happens is the mother leaf becomes too heavy and it needs to be cut off in order for the plant to become its best expression. So the thing in the poetry workshop was sometimes the first thing you write down, the thing that inspires the poem, when you get to the end of the poem and refining it, you see that that initial thing no longer fits. So you need to clip it off in order for the poem to be its best expression. And to me, that's what I need to do when I'm moving from a screenwriter to a director's chair. I need to be willing to cut my mother leaves. I always understand what the essence is of my characters and why they're the best vehicle to tell that story, but I need to be willing to clip the mother leaf. Otherwise, my final vision could be muddied by that.
Clip the mother leaf. I tell you, anytime we talk, I have a new mantra to lead me forward for the next few months. I think that's beautiful. That's so amazing. And it makes sense why you're such a poetic writer, because I think that you surround yourself by poetic inspiration.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a very helpful thing, especially living a creative life. And I think about it all of the time, especially working with actors, right? Because they latch on to a character and how it resonates within their own field, and they can take it in a total other direction. And to me, it's like touch back with why you created that character in the first place and be super aware of what the essential elements of that character are. And as long as that new direction isn't taking away from the why of that character, let them run with it. Because what's usually happening is they're adding depth to the character that you didn't know about before, or that you couldn't imagine, or that they were meant to bring to the project. So it's just, you gotta loosen the reins as long as you don't let go of the horse.
Your analogies are so vivid. And speaking of actors, I wanted to ask you a little bit, because I'm such a gushing fanboy, you worked with Ed Asner on a project. What was it like having Ed Asner speak your words?
It was absolutely incredible. That was, for me, the one thing that I could tell my grandmother that she would be excited about. So that in itself was wonderful to be able to send her a picture.
And for you, for anybody who doesn't know, and I don't know why you would know, Ed Asner is a legendary actor. Please look him up on your IMDb right now so that you can have the context. But so did he, as somebody who's been in it so long, give you, whether through direct advice or through osmosis, any guide points with which to work with actors?
Trust them. He came on to set. He was only there for a single day because it was one big scene in my first film that I wrote but didn't direct that we were talking about before. So he was only there for one day. And there was this total reverence when he walked onto set, but also excitement to meet the man, the myth, the legend. And I watched him deliver my lines. And I couldn't help but beam with excitement because he was so in the character that I had written, that he gave such nuance to the delivery of the lines, yet also captured exactly how I wanted them read. Somehow he did both of those things, where he made it completely his own, but kept it completely how I had put it on the page. And that to me is a true artist, where you take your limitations and you make them work for you. You make them the best they can be within that framework. It's not about making everything your own, right? It's about keep the cone on, right? It's do your best with the cone on. And it's like, take that framework and just make it as beautiful as it can be. And he really taught me to trust an actor's process and method, because we never spoke before that. He just came on and nailed it.
Well, I love trust in the process. And I think you have to also trust yourself that you are, you know, you are the kind of person who should have their words spoken by legendary actors. I think all of us have that imposter syndrome at, you know, sometimes it's at the outset. Sometimes we think we're so cool, we don't have it at the outset. And then it comes in when we've dealt with rejection a little bit more. What do you say to the imposter syndrome when it arises? Is it
throw
something
it in the garbage?
You just punch him in the face and like
throw
get it out of there?
Yeah. Garbage, because the only person that can tell you that you're an imposter is somebody else. And that's just you listening to them. And that is garbage. That is imposter. What am I imposing on something that I think I can do, something that I believe in myself and can move towards and be excited about, and something I'm following my heart about? What am I imposing upon? It's absurd. It's absurd. And anyone that tells you that you're an imposter, you need to create boundaries with that person, because that's the last thing you need in this business. You have enough people telling you no in this business. You don't need somebody calling you an imposter on top of it.
So you haven't stopped. You haven't stopped. You are still writing. You are still directing. You have Wildfire, of course, getting out there, but now you're also moving into the next project. Do you mind telling us a little bit about what's on the horizon for you?
Absolutely. I have a couple of different projects that will possibly move into pre-production. It depends on a lot of moving factors right now, because I do have three scripts written and literally ready to shoot.
I've read a few of them. I'd say they're ready to roll.
Thank you. Of various genres. So we'll see what the universe has in store there. But the one that I do actually have the ability to make happen and put into development right now is called Woman of God. And it's a story about a mid-aged nun back in the 90s, who begins to question her entire life choice, all her religious choices, her vocation. And what happens is an old student of hers comes back to work at the university, and she reignites this nun through both sexuality and intellect. And it brings about a fire in this nun that she doesn't quite understand and is absolutely ill-equipped to deal with. And this student that comes back is profoundly faithful without having anything to do with religion. And it inspires the nun basically to find God. And it's all about finding God however it presents itself to you, whether it's through meditation or through music or through making films or talking to people or swimming in the ocean or climbing mountains, like however your soul speaks to you, finding the higher love through that method, that there's no one way to God is basically the point of this story.
It sounds very personal. And I'm curious, how do you find inspiration to make stories? It sounds similar to what your character is going through.
How do I find inspiration to make stories? Honestly, I always start with the character. I'm so infinitely inspired by humans and intrigued by humanity. Sometimes I feel like an alien, just like observing and taking notes on humans. Like I'm infinitely inspired by humans and what makes them tick and how there's such light and dark in all of us. And it's just a beautiful exploration for me. And that's what always initiates my spark to want to tell a story, because every character has a story to tell. So for me, it's finding the character first and then discovering their story.
As far as the genres in which you tell these stories, do you hold yourself to any specifics, or is it just like whatever mood strikes you, that's the direction you're going to go?
Yeah, I don't really care about labeling myself within a genre. To me, the character tells me the story and the story tells me the genre. I don't really start out with genre. I know that I'm very attracted to character-driven pieces, and I'm very attracted to ensemble dramas, because to me, they most closely resemble my perspective of life, which is no man is an island, right? My story isn't not affecting your story. It's affecting every person I come into contact with. So to me, the ensemble drama is just exploring those tentacles that we have in every aspect of our life and how we're all affecting each other constantly. And to me, without telling that part of the story, we're leaving out a really big piece, which is that we're all on the same planet together. We're all having a shared experience in one way, shape, or form. So why would we not tell a story through that lens?
Every time we speak, my mind is blown by the passion with which you tell things, but the pragmatism also that you put at it. Is there an approach to marrying your creative spirit with the grounded needs of a film set? Do you find that they're ever in conflict? And what do you do in those moments if they ever are in conflict?
I'm very fortunate to be a moon rising Gemini, because I can very easily hold two opposing worlds in perfect balance. So to me, I very naturally can step into a director or a producer position while also maintaining the writer or the creative. But I do think that there's ways to foster that. And it's really all about using everything in your life to find balance. Right. And we can feel our scales tipping one way or another. And it's like really getting in tune with that and being self-aware and knowing that when you're tipping in one direction that feels upstream or effortful, that's probably not the right way to go, and just bring yourself back to center. And I definitely think we can practice that. Yeah, but it's about finding the right role for you as well. You know, not everyone is cut out to be this particular role or that particular role. Like, I produced Wildfire, you know, with my team of producers, but that's not something I'm really interested in doing again. Like, I'll do it because that's how my movies are going to get made at this stage in my career.
There has to be a little bit of that risk and growing in things you're uncomfortable with, because you can only get comfortable in with experience.
Yeah. And you got to do what you got to do. If you want to make movies, but there's no one presenting themselves to do role A, B, C, or D. Guess what? You got to do role A, B, C, and D until you get to the point where someone else can do that for you. And then it's only making you better at what you're doing. I mean, being a producer is only making me a better writer. Being a better writer is only making me a better director. Only making me a better writer. It's like,
you got to know how those different cogs work. It's like, it's one machine with various parts, not various machines working. When it comes to, look, I'm fortunate to know you, and this is the beginning of the career, even though you are, it feels like I would, if somebody said you'd been doing this for 30 years, I would believe them, but we are still at the genesis of your career. When you get to the end of this, what do you want people, when they're looking at the body of work that you've left, what do you want people to say about it? What do you want people to get from the movies that you still have in front of you?
I understand more about myself because of her films.
A personal connection with the films that you make.
A spiritual and existential expansion as a result of their interaction with the films.
Yeah, no, those are better words. Yeah, that's...
Hey, I just try to be specific.
No, it's really cool. I am brought into your spiritual sphere anytime I'm with you. It's a lovely marrying of the you know, what can feel like a very nuts and bolts process of making a film, along with that sort of deeper inherent universality that comes when you are making art with a community. As somebody who is both a learner and a leader, where does community fall into the process for you?
To me, it's a part of every bit of the process, even when I'm completely alone with a keyboard, because I'm envisioning how the words will be said. I'm not saying the words. I'm envisioning how it will present on a screen. I'm not holding the camera. I'm not doing the color work. I'm not building the sound design. Like it's how do I breathe life into this idea, into this seed that will become the tree? You know, I think about when they say everything an oak needs to be after 100 years is all within the acorn, right? Or whatever the hell that saying is.
Sounds about right.
That to me is a movie. Mm. It's like when you finish a script, not even when you finish it, when you type fade in, you're developing that seed and everything it needs to be is already there. So, you know, just following the breadcrumbs and bringing people into the process and into the fold that feel just as passionately as you do, that are just as excited about the characters as you are, feel just as inspired by the vision that you do. And it's like, that's literally the difference between living in hell and living in heaven on earth. Mm. You're either looking at the nuts and bolts of it all and hiring people because they have the best resume or because they came the most highly regarded. Yeah. Okay, great. That's all good too. But if you don't feel excited about working with those people and they don't feel passionate about your project, you're going to feel it the whole way through. And it's going to feel like efforting and it's going to feel like shit. Mm. But if you get excited about every person that you bring into the fold and you're following the breadcrumbs and you're taking chances on a first time person that never did this job before, but you feel something in your gut telling you they're going to be really good at this, take a chance. And you know what? They might suck at it. They might, because that happens too. But you're going to learn something from that. Mm. And you're going to love working with them the whole time because you know that this is an opportunity for you and for them.
Ideally, they're learning as well. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. But it's like, follow those breadcrumbs, do what's exciting. And that whole experience for you is going to be completely magical. Yeah. Is it going to be tricky in parts? Of course, but that's what this place is. Earth is not just about the joys of it all. It's about finding something expansive when we're dealt a challenge.
Mm, I am constantly inspired by you, Jen. I am excited to see Wildfire when I can. Please keep us posted on when it's coming. It's got more festivals coming up, I'm sure.
It doesn't have a release date yet. We're finalizing a few things and then hopefully we'll get it out to some distributors. I don't know. We'll see what happens here. Just follow the breadcrumbs.
Following those breadcrumbs and keeping up with that magic that I think keeps you inspired is really wonderful. It's been really nice to talk to you today, Jen.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Do you have time to answer some stupid fucking questions?
Would love to.
Great. So I've got a segment called Stupid Fucking Questions with Smart Fucking People. So let's dive into it. Please answer as quickly and as don't care at all about this unless you have to. Which Muppet do you most identify with?
Animal.
Oh, me too. Why Animal?
Because I think that's who I am on the inside. He's just like free and he doesn't give a shit and he's making his music and screaming. He's having a good time. That is a free being. And that's who I am at my essence.
I love that. You're in a part of the country where I feel like creatures and fantasies and cryptids and monsters are very popular. If you could pick any fantasy creature to do a movie about, what would it be?
Probably Bigfoot.
Mm, yeah, there's still a lot of Bigfoot territory that you can cover in film.
Yeah, probably Bigfoot.
Bigfoot as a character for you to break apart? I would love to see that. We have to work on that. What sitcom characters would you most like to live next door to?
Sitcom characters?
Sitcom characters. Go back to TGIF if you have to.
I think Kramer might be fun to live next to.
Okay, yeah, Kramer. Yeah, always stopping by. You seem like someone who would love to just have a neighbor like that.
I feel like I'd be fully entertained all the time. And I hate when people call first, just drop by. So I feel like he's the perfect one.
That makes sense why you gave somebody in France your phone number. What's the first movie you can remember seeing?
Probably Jurassic Park.
Mm. Did it have a big effect on you?
Oh my God. Saw it in the theater and I could still remember seeing the raptors for the first time. I mean, it's especially at the end when the one pops out and mm-hmm. hunting the guy.
That moment is so good.
Clever girl. Like I that movie changed me. It really, really did. And it stands the test of time. I watched it again not too long ago and it's solid.
It does. And I think it's a good showcase of why one movie is enough. You know, one movie is always enough.
I mean, two was even good. But
two movies can be good. Yeah. Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah. Stop after.
Stop.
Get out of there.
Yeah.
Oh, this you're going to like this one. Thinking in terms of Captain Planet. Are you earth, fire, wind, water, or heart?
Oh, Oh, see, you added that last one and you messed me up.
I did.
Because I am 1000% fire in every way, but heart, that might be my superpower.
Okay, we're going to have some hybrid superpowers on the reboot of Captain Planet. When you go to the movie theater, what's your snack of choice?
Oh, Sour Patch Kids.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's so cool.
Sour Patch Kids all the way.
One box or two?
One.
Okay.
But if I'm feeling crazy that day, I also get Raisinets.
Oh my goodness. Ooh, that is so crazy, Jen. I've never heard anything crazier
to
than
that. Have two boxes of candy.
Wild one.
Living on the edge. I told you I was like animal.
Would you rather be stuck in a Groundhog's Day style repeating loop or a slider situation where you have to shift through dimensions to find home?
Oh, definitely Groundhog Day. I think we're already in Groundhog Day, to be honest. And I think I'm just killing it more every time. So definitely that.
You are improving. That's what it is. It feels like you're never aging and you're always getting better. That actually, I would agree with that.
That's my secret. Don't tell anyone.
You're a power lunch type of person. If you could have a power lunch with one historical person, who would it be?
Mm.
And I tend to say they have to be, they can't be living.
They can't be living.
Yeah, everybody wants to say somebody living. You know, let's, I'm not, these are stupid questions. Whoever you want to say is good.
That's incredible. I have no answer for that. Wait, yes, I do. Yes, oh. I do. Rainer Marie Rilke.
This is a name I am unfamiliar with. Can you?
You do know it. You mentioned one of his most famous books earlier, Letters to a Young Poet.
My apologies.
He is my favorite poet.
That is so good. Okay, so I've learned something today. I've got to read that. I was referring to Anna Deavere Smith's Letters to a Young Artist, but I assume she probably lifted that title. That was
there
probably.
You go.
Who is a musician that people should go listen to right now?
Fiona Apple.
That's a classic. That's a deep cut cap. Okay, I love that.
Fiona Apple, all the way. Listen to When the Pawn, which I still know the whole like 80 plus word title 30 years later. But that is one of the most profoundly, deeply felt albums of music I've ever experienced in my entire life. And it is still giving 30 years later, or 20, however many years it was.
And then finally, if you have a pair of tickets to anything in the world, what are you seeing?
Another galaxy.
A space travel.
Space travel for sure. Like, I want to see another planet full of beings that think they're the only planet full of beings in the whole universe. And I want to check that place out.
Not unlike how you're looking at the Earth sometimes.
Exactly. Maybe it's where I'm actually from.
Well, I know you're probably going to take your wife with you, but if there's if we get a third ticket, please, I'll jump on board with you.
All right, let's do it.
Thanks, Jen. That was fun.
That was great.
If you'd like to support the show, click that follow button, share us with your friends, and give us a shout out on Instagram and Twitter at MYS Podcast. If you'd like to follow me, I'm on Instagram at Kyle F. Andrews. For those listeners who'd like to go the extra mile and help me make this shit, we also have a no-pressure Patreon over at patreon.com/MYS Podcast. You can find these links and more in our show notes.
I'm your host, Kyle F. Andrews. My consulting producer is Emily Castro. Our theme song is Keep On Dancing by Monday Hope.
Until next time, keep making that shit.